Good morning and thank you for being here. If you are visiting with us, we are so thrilled that you're with us. Thank you for stopping in to join us. If you are here for the first time in a while because we've got stuff going for your little ones, thank you for being here and for staying for worship. This was our first Sunday where the five and under group was meeting in classes, so we are now open from newborns all the way up to as old as you want to be. And so be part of our classes if you would like, and we encourage you to do that. I know that Charlotte and her team have been preparing and praying and excited and probably a little nervous about getting all of our littles back together. And so keep them in your prayers. And if I wouldn't have been teaching, I wanted to peek in. I think they were all wearing full face shields to teach our kids. And they've gone through a lot of work to keep our kids and thus their parents and their grandparents as safe as possible. So thank you for all that you guys have done. And I love the sound of our kids. Don't let them run up here, but I love the sound of your kids. All right. One of my favorite stories of all time I've probably told. And so if you've heard me tell this story, then pretend you haven't and just listen again. But most of you know I love cars. And so I love reading about cars and history of cars and things like that. And one of my favorite stories out of the automotive world happened way, way, way back in the early days of Ford. And Ford had a plant that they had built, and it was run by a system of generators by a man named Charlie Steinmetz. Charlie Steinmetz was kind of the electrical guru of his day, and he had built these generators especially for Henry Ford so that they could run the whole platform that would then pull out all of those cars and put them into service. Well, something goes wrong, and Henry Ford is ticked off. And if you've ever read much about Henry Ford, he had quite a temper, and so he kind of loses it, and he's mad because the generator is down, and he gets word to Charlie Steinmetz, and Charlie Steinmetz rides his horse into the Ford plant. He didn't drive a Ford, oddly enough. Rides his horse into the Ford plant, gets in this big, giant room, and he tinkers for a few minutes, walks out, hits the button, and everything starts running. And Henry Ford is ecstatic. Business is back on. Well, a few days later, he is delivered by courier a bill from Charlie Steinmetz for $10,000. And $10,000 100 years ago, that's a whole lot of money. And I mean, Henry Ford loses it. And he's yelling at everybody, and he's yelling as he gets down. And he finally finds Charlie Steinmetz, and he says, "What do you think you're doing giving me a bill for $10,000? You worked for 5 minutes. And so Charlie Steinmetz said, "Well, give me the bill back, and I'll fix it." And so he took his pen out of his pocket, and he wrote down on his bill for tinkering, $10. For knowing where to tinker, $9,990, and gave Henry Ford the bill back, and Henry Ford paid him then and there. Can you put a price on wisdom? I mean, Henry Ford might have been ticked off that he got billed for $10,000 for a five-minute job, but you've had those moments with your plumbing and with your cars, and I know in the heat of our summer, when it was 110 every single day and your air conditioner went out, that you had no idea where to tinker. But you brought that guy in and you griped about paying him $100 an hour, but you were thrilled to write him the check because he had a certain set of wisdom about that air conditioner that you've never and probably never will have. I think that's part of Solomon's story. You've heard me say before, Solomon I find to be one of the most intriguing characters of the Old Testament. Intriguing because of how he starts and hopeful because of how he finishes and brokenhearted about everything that's in between. But Solomon, when he starts his story, starts it well. 2 Chronicles 1 verse 1 reads like this: "Solomon, son of David, established himself firmly over the kingdom, for the Lord his God was with him, and he made him exceedingly great." Now we have Solomon's story really contained in two different books, in 2 Chronicles and then in 1 Kings. And we're going to mostly reflect from the story from 1 Kings. But it's interesting how the writer of 1 Chronicles says, here's what God has done. God made his kingdom exceedingly great. For many, Solomon's time was the golden days of Israel. They were the days when Israel was the biggest, when Israel was the wealthiest, when Israel was the most feared. And so David comes in, and Michael talked about David next week. And David comes in, and he gets that kingdom solidified and starts to build it and defeats all of the people around. And then Solomon kind of takes over a nation that is, for the most part, at peace. And his question is, what do I do next? And I love how Solomon starts. So we're going to read a little and preach a little through his story. So let's begin in 1 Kings chapter 3. The king went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place, temple not built yet. And Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, "Ask for whatever you want, and I will give it to you." Okay, so here's kind of our introduction into Solomon. The first couple chapters of 1 Kings deals with the issues between David and another son and getting everything kind of solidified. And so chapter 3 starts the Solomon narrative. And so Solomon begins his kingship with sacrifices. And it's not just something piddly. He brings 1,000 cattle up to the hill. The enormity of the sacrifice that Solomon makes is, I believe, his desire to communicate with God that he wants to not only be his, but maybe possibly that he wants an audience with God. And so here they come to Gibeon, and they're on Gibeon, and this is the high place. This is where people come to make their sin offerings and their sacrifices when they can't come to the tabernacle. And so he comes to this place, and he says, here is what we're going to do. We're going to make this offering, and God is going to say, what do you want? Now, I find that to be a haunting line, because in my journey as a father, in my journey as a friend, I have never given blank check to anybody. I've never once said to anybody, whatever you want, you got. David, whatever you want, you got. David might go out and buy a Corvette, and now I'm in trouble. So, but God gives Solomon the blank check. And so we keep reading the story. Solomon answered, "You have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne this very day. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, but I am only a little child and I do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people that you have chosen, a great people too numerous to count or even number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours?" Okay, what's interesting in Solomon's first comments, he's got this audience with God now. And so the audience with God begins with God saying, "Ask whatever you want and I will grant that." And he could have asked for 100 things, but he chooses to first say, "God, you're pretty good. And you've given this to David, my father. And David ruled this people with his heart. And now he has passed it on to me. And I ask you for a discerning heart." It's interesting that the blessing that Solomon asks for is a blessing that will enable him to bless all others. And I believe this is Solomon's finest hour. There will be moments when Solomon builds a temple and he prays a beautiful prayer that we get in 1 Chronicles. It's a beautiful prayer, but I don't think that's Solomon's finest hour. There's going to be chapter 10 when Solomon meets the Queen of Sheba and he takes her breath away with his wisdom and all that is around him. I don't think that is Solomon's greatest moment. I think Solomon's finest hour is when he says to God, "Give me a discerning heart." Then the story continues with verse 10. The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, "Since you have asked for this, and not for long life, not for wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that you're in your lifetime you will have no equal among the kings." It's interesting that God has always been a more than you asked for God. Do you realize that sometimes? Have you noticed in your prayer life that you've been asking God for one thing and you look back at it weeks later or months later or years later and he was a more than you ever asked for kind of God? You've heard me quote probably a million times, maybe not a million, at least 1,000 times from Ephesians chapter 3. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably abundantly beyond all that we ask or imagine, according to his power that works within us, to him be the glory forever and ever. Amen. Is that there's that idea that comes from, whether it's Solomon or it comes from Ephesians chapter 3, that God is a God who gives you more than you can ever ask. And Solomon says, here is what I desire more than anything else. I want a mind that can discern. And God does exactly that. Now, we don't know exactly how Solomon, we get an idea. Solomon is probably a young man when he takes over as king. And so when he uses that line, I am only a child, that's probably a rather poignant line that says, I'm pretty young and maybe a little bit naive. And so we ask God to do and to give this discerning mind, and God does exactly that. You get on further into chapter 3 of 1 Kings and to verse 16, and there's that story that maybe is the most famous story about Solomon. And you've got the two prostitutes who come before him, and one's child is dead. And Solomon is going to give a great little speech in the midst of that, and through his wisdom is going to figure out who is the real mom of the child that is still alive. And it's a moving story that shows his wisdom. The end of chapter 3, Solomon is going to be told like this: when all Israel heard the verdict of the king, they held the king in awe because they saw that he had wisdom from God to administer justice. It was a powerful story. And so as Solomon starts to lead the people of Israel, they start to notice his wisdom in the midst of these conferences and discussions. And again, we already alluded to taking the breath away of the Queen of Sheba in 1 Kings chapter 10. And then we get 1 Kings chapter 4, that is this final little piece about Solomon. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the people of the East and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. Okay, I love Solomon's beginning. We're not going to reflect on the rest of Solomon's story. Maybe we'll come back to it in a few weeks. But Solomon's beginning starts great. And Solomon brings this golden age to Israel that God wanted to be able to give the people. There's this line in 1 Kings 4 where it says, the people of Judah and Israel were as numerous as the sand on the seashore. They ate, they drank, and they were happy. Now that's what God wants to give his people. That God wants to look down at his people that will follow him and have this deep abiding faith in him and bless them as richly as he possibly can without them going overboard. And so the note we get on Solomon is Solomon's beginning is great. But what can we learn from 1 Kings chapter 3? I mean, if we're talking about these great characters of the Bible, and we've spent a few minutes kind of telling his story, how do I take Solomon's story from a long, long, long time ago and bring it into a 21st century church? And I think the answer is we need to ask for a discerning mind. For a mind that is wise with the wisdom that comes from God. So the first thing that I need to tell myself, and thus if I'm going to preach to myself first, I'll preach to you guys second, is wisdom or discernment ought to be sought. Okay, sometimes we think that wisdom and intelligence are not the same thing. So let me give you a story of the wisest man for a long time that I had ever known. When I was going through graduate school, I worked at a small little bookstore there in Lubbock. And the reason I worked at the bookstore in Lubbock is when you go to graduate school, your books are literally thousands of dollars a semester, even back in the dark ages when we didn't have computers to go to college with. And so I needed to find a place to work where I could get a discount on books so I could save a little money for my family. And so I worked at this bookstore, and I did what was called the receiving, and the other guy on the other side of the window, he did the send-out packaging. And we talked through that window. And when I first got there, I thought, I'm the smartest guy in the room. I mean, I'm in graduate school, and I know the Bible kind of forwards and backwards, and I think I got all this together. And I was, just, in my mind, a pretty wise guy. I was the wrong kind of wise guy, but I thought I was a pretty wise guy. And through the window was this 75-year-old broke farmer who walked with a limp and whose only job was to figure out how much a package weighed and to figure out how much postage to put on there and to roll it down the roller. And I thought, I'm going to have to spend the next year and a half talking with this old country bumpkin through this window. And Alani Bell, who's the country bumpkin through the window, is now in heaven, and he's listening to the sermon, shaking his head, because I was dead wrong. Here I was reading all the books and knowing all the languages and being able to tell you all the historical things that you really could care less about. And I could give you more details than you ever wanted to know about subjects you could have cared less about. And wisdom and intelligence were not the same thing. Because through that window was a broke old farmer whose body was broken down, but who is the wisest man I've ever met. See, wisdom is God-given insight on how to live. It's not studying from a book, unless it's the book. It's not wisdom that's about how to best define electricity or how to make a car go 0 to 60 really fast. It's about how do we live in the midst of a fallen world by God's plan. That's what wisdom is. And this is the most important thing for us to seek. See, so often we seek knowledge. I want to be smarter, and I want to be better at my job, and I want to know more and more scripture, and I want to know more and more insight. Or if I'm an engineer, I want to know more and more how things work so I can make this that already works work a little bit better. Or if I'm a school teacher, how can I learn the craft of teaching better so that when I'm sitting in front of the computer and maybe one day soon in front of a classroom, I can teach them better. But it's more than just intelligence. Wisdom needs to be sought. Solomon himself would write in Proverbs 4, "Wisdom is supreme, therefore get it. Though it cost all you have, get understanding." My friends, we need to seek it. James would say this, "If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him." Colossians 1 verse 9 reads like this, "For this reason, since the day we heard about you, we have not stopped praying for you and asking God to fill you with the knowledge of his will through all spiritual wisdom and understanding." So it doesn't matter if it's Solomon, doesn't matter if it's James, it doesn't matter if it's Paul praying over a church somewhere else. What they all say, what they all have in common is this discernment, this wisdom from above ought to be sought. And I hope you start your day praying for it every single day. Because let's be honest, in the world that we live, you need it. When you're raising your kids, you don't necessarily need to be able to quote every book on parenting that's ever been written. But you better have a little bit of wisdom every now and then. And in the midst of doing your job, maybe your job is highly intellectual and you got to be pretty smart to do your job, there are still going to be moments when you need to know where to tinker. And you didn't get that from going to Texas Tech. In our families, in our jobs, in our world, in our daily wrestling with what goes on in an everyday world, we need to pray for wisdom. Okay, I mentioned in Bible class how I start off my day. So that was the first part of how I start my day before I ever get up. The second thing I do after that part, so you have to go back and watch Bible class to get the first part. But the second part is I go over my schedule. And I say, okay, I know so-and-so is coming to the office, and I know I'm going out to this public event, and I know I'm going to be doing this at the soup kitchen today, and I'm going to be here, and I'm going to be here, and I plan on getting coffee at this place, and I'm going to come back, and I go over that schedule of who I'm going to meet, whether I know it or not. And the final part of that prayer is, God, give me the right thing to say, and give me the right counsel to give, and give me the right mood to be able to help somebody. And if they're in a ditch, help me to grab their hand. And if they're in a predicament, help me to help them get out of their predicament. And if they're just having a bad day, may they smile when they're done with the preacher from Country Club Road. And then there's always the prayer for wisdom. Because whether you're the preacher or the elder or the Bible class teacher or you're the person in the seat, you need to be praying constantly that wisdom might come your way, so you can handle everything else that does. The second thing is, when we've got wisdom, it blesses the surrounding people. See, I think a big part of wisdom is, and you see it in Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 3, it's the practical application of what God has given. And it's more than just who you are, but it's also who you are, what you know, and how it's changed you. Some of the best people I've ever known, and far the wise guys, they never finished high school. But yet you can sit across a table and they can tell you about who they are, and they can tell you about how God has worked through that, and they can tell you about how God has delivered them, and they can tell you all about the practical application of what God has done to help his people. And they are definitely wise guys among us. James 3 reads like this: "But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, and then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere." Notice, he's defining the wisdom that comes from above. He's not defining some other intelligence. He's defining wisdom that comes from God. And notice all of those things that it does blesses people. See, if we're going to pray to be wise, then I think in the midst of our prayer to be wise, we ought to pray that our wisdom can then bless people. Whether it's across a coffee table, whether it's in the midst of a small group, whether it's in the midst of two people at the polling place and one's about to lose it, and I almost am willing to guarantee we're going to see stuff like that on Tuesday. To be wise and be ready to do and say what God wants us to do. See, I believe the church more than ever needs a lot more wise guys. Not wise guys as in smart Alex. We got plenty of those. But wise guys who are willing to use their wisdom that has been given to them from above to bless the world around them. But the third thing that I think comes out of Solomon's story that impacts us is wisdom ultimately points to the one who gives it. Solomon wrote in Proverbs 2 verse 6, "For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding." Ephesians 5 reads, "Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Therefore do not be foolish," which is the opposite of wise. "Do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery, but instead be filled with the Spirit." I think what Paul is trying to say and what Solomon has said in Proverbs chapter 2 is when we've got this wisdom that has come from above and when we realize how that needs to be used and how it needs to be focused on the world around us, we are more than willing to let that flow out of us and nothing else. I find that Ephesians 5 passage to be interesting. He's going to go on to talk about music, but sandwich in the midst of it is, here's what we're supposed to be filled with. That I'm not supposed to be filled with liquor, because that's going to make me do stupid things sometimes, but instead I'm supposed to be filled with the Spirit. When I'm filled with the Spirit, and I'm letting the Spirit guide and lead and direct, that is when I am at my wisest. Not when I think that I've got it. You ever had those moments when you thought you could solve the problem all on your own? I was thinking back a couple years ago that a family had come into my office and they were wrestling with their finances, and probably the one kind of counseling I feel the best about giving is counseling in the financial realm, because that's pretty A, B, C, and D. You line it up and you go. There's not too much to deal with. And so they come into the office and they start saying their problem, and I think, I've got this. This is going to be a piece of cake. They're going to be smiling and they're going to be rich by the time they walk out. And they didn't listen to a word I said, and by the time our conversation was done, it had gone from worse to worse still to worse yet. And I thought I could do it. And I thought I could use my own wisdom and not the wisdom of God. I had to call them back and say, "Why don't you come in again and let's talk differently? And this time, I'm going to have somebody else with me. Someone who's far wiser." Because wisdom is important. See, all of us have people we go to when we're in the midst of a pinch. We have people we call at 2 o'clock in the morning when life is going the wrong direction. Usually, those people are the wisest people we know. And they've been there, and they've fought through it, and they've been able to endure the hardships that often come with making bad mistakes. But who better to help you get out of a ditch than one who was in the ditch before? Okay, this church is full of wise men and women. And what's funny is they are of all ages. We've got our elders who are all older than me, who are wise guys. We've got some young parents that are pretty wise in their parenting ability. We've got some people who are kind of in the middle. We've got some mamas that have already raised their kids that have more wisdom when it comes to parenting than any book you'll ever buy at Amazon, because they've been through it. I hope you will find those people within this church and within your life to be able to take your problems to and say, I can't figure out what's going on with my kid, or I can't figure out how to practice discipline, or I can't figure out how to make my husband take out the trash. Go to Jan Donahue. Tim takes out the trash better than any person in our church. If you can't figure those things out, you go to those who are the wise men and women who've been there, and you say, how can I do this better? We're going to sing a song, and you're going to have a chance to find Michael or I. Michael's in the middle, and I'll be down here. You're going to have a chance to find elders who are all through this room. And if you need their wisdom and their counsel and their love and their discipleship, they want to give it, but they can't give it to you unless they're asked. And so let them know if you've got any needs. If you need us in any way, let us know as we stand and as we sing. Wayne?